Wasn't any.
Well, there's no one else here. Okay. All right. Now the EO report.
Well, I'll go to 17, but I was going to show some slides from the field trip. And
I hope you have some wildlife. At least as entertaining as an elephant and a zebra.
There's a couple of board members there. A
couple of board members?
A little wildlife.
Speaking of us, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, Steve was there.
Hopefully it's here. So this is your report as far as board members. Jeff asked me to put a little bit of information together, and initially we thought, well, it would be for the board members who weren't present. The one board member who wasn't present is now gone. That would be Gary. And then we thought, well, it will be for the new board members who will be appointed, possibly one or two, to provide some more information. Well, they're not here either. So I will go faster, but if you look at this photo courtesy of Mr. Google, this is actually the confluence of Tembladero Slough that Steve was just talking about with the old Salinas River Channel right there. So Tembladero Slough, old Salinas River Channel, and then it goes on up to Moss Landing. And this is a closer up view, but this is actually in the, what do you call it, the Wayback Machine? This is a historical photo. Not that historic, though. It's 2005, but it's pre-construction, prior to the constructed wetland going in. So this is not something that you saw on the field, but it does show that there's a different kind of vegetation in this ground that's a little bit higher. This is where the constructed wetland went in, and then this is natural wetland area. But you can kind of see from this picture, chances are, before this ag field was in, there was probably wetland here, there was probably wetland over here, probably wetland over here, to get to the point that Steve was making with some of his pictures. So here's the constructed wetland from the air, and this shows the scheme, and all of you were there, so you know what the scheme is, to pump out of the slough a small amount of the water, small fraction of the flow, run through the constructed wetland, and then out to the natural wetland, and then out to the slough again. This is from a much lower flying satellite, apparently. And one extra little detail that you can pick up here is there's some little white dots here, and those are actually those well heads. You might remember there were shallow groundwater monitoring wells, and they're in this area. And this is the pump station. So I'm not going to go over these numbers. You heard a lot of these numbers in the field in terms of the success of the constructed wetland in reducing nitrogen and pesticides, which, of course, reduces toxicity. Here's the wildlife that I promised those board members. And so we had about 24 people, as it turns out, pretty good turnout. This is at the inlet. You'll all remember this. This is where the water comes in, and it's got a pretty good mat of algae in there. And this does point out the pilot, that it's just a pilot project, a small portion of flow, about 1%. And you can see by the size of this pipe that it can't possibly pump much of the flow in the slough. Some figures again that I provided for you earlier, but it shows significant nitrate reduction. So here's nitrate coming in. These are different runs. These are all different dates when different data were collected, showing concentrations coming in as high as, I guess the highest one here is about 45 milligrams per liter as nitrogen, and getting significant reductions. This one has the best results, I think, and it gets down to pretty close to zero. This shows diazinon reduction, and what we didn't have before, so this might be new information for you, is what the listing criteria is for diazinon. So here's the line, a little bit hard to see, but 0.16. So you can see that the constructed wetland was successful in reducing the concentration through the length of the wetland. There it is. So this is at the end of the wetland, where this would be representative of the discharge, and it's well below the listing criteria. So that was pretty successful, at least as far as what that demonstrates. These are some of the facts about the constructed wetland, again, just as reminders, and I can stop and go back if you want. Very small percentage, 0.2% in terms of if you look at nitrogen load from what's coming out of the watershed. And it would take, consequently, several hundred wetland acres to eliminate nitrate from the watershed to an acceptable level. Adjacent groundwater got extremely low in concentration, but that's very shallow groundwater in the wetland. And this, I don't know if that's the same outline that you had, Steve, but anyway, this is the basins. So this shows it's a significantly large basin compared to the little wetland project right down here. And this is the handout, and Jeff, you asked me to include this, the handout that we received from the farmers there, where they talked about, as the heading says, a collective treatment system for their discharge and combine multiple discharges to drain to some single location similar to this constructed wetland for treatment. They talk about, and this is my highlighting, tailoring individual projects to watershed needs, incorporating one or more techniques to achieve goals. And I think that's important because I don't think anybody is saying, well, this is it. This is the answer for runoff problems. There are a wealth of opportunities as far as practices that can be put in that would help reduce the need for treatment like this. So, for example, one of the key things, and this goes back to when we had our ag advisory group, and while we didn't have much agreement out of that group, one of the points of agreement, almost universal agreement, was that a lot of the acreage in our region could significantly reduce or even eliminate their ag tailwater. So, of course, to the extent that that can be done, then there's less to be treated as far as surface water goes. Doesn't mean there isn't still a groundwater problem. But that's the idea of using different techniques to achieve the goals. Let's see, talking about pooling of resources here, getting the most bang for the buck. This one, I highlighted this to point out that their perspective is farmers would be allowed to focus on farming efficiently while scientists, I'll say, and agencies would design and manage the system. To me, that kind of sounds like wanting to pass the buck and saying agencies and scientists like Cal State University can do these things, and then they would not have as much responsibility. I don't think that's the right attitude to have towards their discharge. This talks about opportunities for partnerships and broaden access to sources of funding. And one of the reasons I highlight that is I think you've got an industry. You know, it's big business, and they've got to look at providing the funds to do what they need to do to meet the standards, as opposed to mindset towards accessing other sources of government funding. So I'm editorializing while I'm looking at their handout. And also, they talked about this collective treatment system. And one of the things that you might recall they talked about in the field was this idea of conveyance, which also gets to what Steve was talking about in terms of the slough as a natural waterway as opposed to a sewer system or something. So they were asking the question, can we use creeks or sloughs to transport high nitrogen or other contaminants to sub-regional treatment systems? And we were talking in the field while Jeff, I think, took the lead and said, this is all going to come before the board. However, we have standards for receiving waters. That's a given. And the idea of simply transporting water all through the watershed down the lower end or even intermediate points and using the natural waterways as kind of a sewer system is certainly not consistent with protecting all the receiving waters. What I talked about then in response to that briefly was the idea of treatment systems higher up in the watersheds, closer to the sources for, say, small groups of farms before you have contaminants going into the creeks. And then subsequently, after the field trip, I talked with or communicated with Fred Watson, the principal investigator, a little bit to try to get, I wanted to understand his notion of a compliance model. And he gave it to me in words. I've tried to draw a picture here to portray what he was thinking of in terms of a possible compliance model with the success of this constructed wetland. So let's say you have you're higher up in the watershed and you have good quality water before it's degraded significantly. So then you start getting discharges from agriculture, and what happens, you get mixing and you get more degradation in the receiving water, and say you get another source here, you get more degradation. Now let's say that 10 happened to be the target for this water, which isn't always going to be the case, but let's say that's the case. And at this point, this is where the constructed wetland idea could come in, and you could actually pull water out, go through the A wetland, I use the picture of the one that we have, back out at a lower concentration, so you have, and of course, significant volumes, and then you'd have a lower concentration, and then you have assimilative capacity, basically, in the water, and so it goes on down. Now, the other thing that I didn't put in here as a model would be, instead of even going to the surface water with these inputs, having ag runoff that goes directly to these kinds of features as well. So that's a compliance model that Fred was talking about. I think it's different from what the farmers were talking about in the field.
Yeah, could I just add briefly? One of their points on their handout was that no farmland would be lost. And what was the number of acres you said would be required to clean the entire watershed?
It depends. Fred had, he said hundreds of acres. It depends on what assumptions you use and what standard you're shooting for, but
yeah,
hundreds of acres.
So that becomes the question for me is, which farmland where, which farmers would be asked to contribute to this collective system?
Right.
It would have to come out of farmland.
Or systems.
Right.
Multiple systems. So that's, we'll move on from there and just very briefly go to the other spots that we visited. Here's the constructed wetland again. We went down along the Salinas River to Benny Jefferson's farm, and these are the said ponds. These are features that he put in with the assistance, I think he said with RCD assistance. I don't know if you remember, Russ, but I think he said 20 years ago or so.
20, 25 years ago.
Yeah. And they actually serve a bunch of different functions, sediment control, control of water that doesn't have to go to the river, and they can actually pump out of here and use water for dust control and that sort of thing. They actually dredge here, and instead of disposing of that, it goes back out into the field. So they're using this as a soil recycling system as well as a water recycling system. So it's pretty neat from that standpoint. They get reeds in here and whatnot, and they have to periodically clear those out. Although he's tolerant of having basically wildlife habitat in here, in spite of the fact that it's right next to fields, and of course this gets into the food safety question, but it seems to work for him. And then we went, I'll back up a little bit here. In this aerial, you can see on further up the river, see this disturbance right here? That's where we went next to the Rubber Ducky Dam. And this is it during construction. You didn't see it in this state because it was finished, but you can see the amount of ground that they had to tear up to construct this thing. And then this is during construction as well, with sheet piling across the river and installation of the dam. I don't know who that wildlife is in the middle there, but...
Rubber boots on. Weird.
Yeah. Speaking of rubber boots, those are my wife's sailing wet weather boots right there. Good picture of them. So here's the dam, and then the grate over here past Benny is the goes over the fish ladder. The reason this the pumping structure is so high is because this is flood level up here over Russ's vehicle. You're underwater there, Russ. Some other pictures here. You were all, well, actually, John, you weren't there, but. And so that's it, unless you have any questions or other observations, since most of you were there.
Dr. Hunter.
One thing we did learn about the constructed wetlands project is that they are out of funds. And I understand that the continued operation could extend the understanding that's coming out of that pilot or that demonstration project, and that pretty much it's a system up and running and they just need to pay the power bill for running the pumps and, small fraction probably of what it costs to install it and so forth. So is there any interest or any way that we can look at our supplemental funds for assisting with that, or are we going to try to support? I know Fred Watson responded to that and said basically he has not put time into aggressively going after more funds to continue this project. But it looks to me like we have the opportunity to continue to compile data that will establish, on a longer term, the benefits that we're seeing in this initial run. And so I'm hoping that that's something we can assist with either, in helping to identify funds or in identifying funds from within our own resources.
The amount of money.
Go ahead, Dave.
Just to say the amount of money I think was fairly small, like $10,000 a year or something. And I did talk with the farmers at that session. I think the president of the farm group and one of the advisors, and they assured me that they had already started a plan to raise the money to continue this project. So I think it's taken care of, but perhaps staff can make sure of that.
Well, just to follow up then, Dr. Hunter's, and I know in a report that Roger sent out that I had questioned if there was funds available, not so much for that operation, because I think the local farmers are probably going to keep that one going by paying the fees. But I was looking for other demonstration projects further up the valley and possibly in our southern region as well to demonstrate to the farmers that this type of project would work. Seeing is sometimes 99% of the problem is believing after you see what the operation can happen. Now, the area that they had this in, and Roger talked about tailwater, of course there's all kinds of tailwaters, but most of us realize that when you get west of Salinas, and the reason that you see the ditches that Steve has shown, and there were several sloughs in that particular area and back in history, is simply because that percolation rate is basically zero because of the hard pan and the clay layers there. Of course, there's fractions, but very little water is percolated on the west side of Salinas simply because of that issue. So most of the farmers over the history of farming in that particular Blanco area and the area that we're in put the tile drains in for their tailwaters to be discharged in those particular areas and carried to whatever point it was carried to. They don't have much choice, and I know that there was, during our discussion during the ag waivers of no tailwater at all. Now, some parts of the Salinas Valley you can do that, but other parts of Salinas Valley, it's almost impossible to have that. Now, this demonstration project, being as small as it is, but it does show it works. And I think what the farmers are looking at is taking area that is non-productive. And I think the question, Jeff, which you pretty much answered to them, is that they would like to transport some of their tailwaters to a centralized point that is not farming productive lands and to be able to use this type of project to mitigate their discharges. I think that's what it really boils down to. And I would like, and Roger sent out a list of funds that are available, because I had asked the question. I don't think that we should, you know, even if it's a small amount, if we can put up a demonstration project, whatever it is, and of course we just heard about the LID and how successful that is, and this particular project, if we can demonstrate that, then the money's worthwhile being spent. But I don't see us, and we probably do not have the funds, this agency, for a long term. Once it's up and running and it's proved that it's operable, then those folks should take over the responsibility of continuing to operate it. That's where I'm coming from.
Russ, do you think that what Fred has done right now is enough of a demonstration project?
I think it's enough of a demonstration project for that location. But, you know, I see areas that it's a little different configuration, like Chular Canyon area. Now, I did, you know, Monterey County Water Resources had representatives there, and they were really enthused, and I talked to them, and I'm sure they mentioned it to you as well, Jeff, that they have other locations along the, not on the Salinas River, but associated to the Salinas River, that they could do these same projects all up and down the Salinas River. But my thought is that here's a project that's been proven to the Blanco farmers that can work. The Jefferson's farm's been doing this for 25 years, but probably I knew Benny's father, and he's probably been doing it for 50 years. Of course, he's passed away now, but, you know, this is third or fourth generation that's been doing this type of process simply because where they're located. But I feel that we have to take the lead if we can and show that these are beneficial and these will work. And it can work not only for agriculture, but it can also work for municipalities. It's a good demonstration project. So I think it would be money well spent. And Roger, I appreciate you putting that list together that of the funds that are available, but it all depends on how the board wants to use those. But again, I will reiterate, I don't think we should continue to fund them after the demonstration project. I think if it shows that it works, then those local folks should pick up the cost to continue it. But, Monica, thanks for bringing it up.
Yeah, as Russ said, he talked to me about that concept, and consequently that's why I put together the information that was in the memo sent out last Thursday, I think it was. And I told Russ at the time that we collectively, agencies, whether it's us through mitigation funding that we have provided and continue to provide for the Water Quality Coalition for the Cooperative Monitoring Program, we have put millions of dollars through the resource conservation districts, through federal funding, through proposition money. This project was funded with Prop 40 funds, I think. Millions and millions of dollars have gone into these kinds of things, demonstration projects, outreach projects, pilot projects in our region, and millions just in the Salinas Valley and Elkhorn Slough area. And it seems to me at some point you've got a for-profit industry. These are not municipalities that are strapped for funding, as we were talking about with the LID issue. You know, where Darla was saying they can't even drive to go to training. To me, that makes a whole lot more sense to try to help out our municipalities that are not for-profit organizations. But we're talking about a $6-7 billion industry in our region. And frankly, when we were sitting at lunch there and Fred was asked, you know, what's it going to cost to keep the minimal monitoring going, and it was $5,000 for the year, and everybody just kind of sat there, I was pretty astounded. And so I'm glad to hear, Dave, I wasn't aware of your update, that they said they've got something underway to collect the change, you know, to continue to fund that, and I think that's the way it should be. That's why I say I was astounded that somebody didn't say, you know, we'll take care of that, because they were trying to convince you that this is a great project and this is a great way to go. And it's their discharge. You know, it's not our discharge. So at some point, you got to move away from pilot projects and demonstration projects. Fred said, yeah, we've shown it works. So then, and of course, every situation, I agree with you, Russ, every situation is different. We can't, I don't think we can have a model of providing demonstration projects for every situation. You mentioned another creek is a little different. Well, they're all different. And they would all have to be designed individually. But I think the model is the industry that's responsible for the discharge has to pay for that.
I just want to add one point, though, to keep in mind, and that is I think a very important comment that Fred made about a shift in his approach and a shift in the way he sees the Watershed Institute being part of solution, developing solutions for the water quality problems, and that he, you know, he's in a point right now in that program where he can continue this direction provided he finds the funding. And that really is an important point to consider, because not only is it kind of neutral in terms of the science, they're building good relationship again with the farmers, but it's also training, more important, training students who are going to immediately be picked up by the RCDs and by the Farm Bureau and by the other kind of network of technical assistance. So I don't want to overlook the fact that the Watershed Institute is growing this and maybe focus a little more on some critical points where we could make sure that that growth continues and that that program survives. Because if he loses funding and he doesn't have those programs for his students to be involved in, they'll move on to other research areas. Now, the farmer should be looked to as one of the pools for supporting the work, and we should encourage that in every way we can, especially with the ag waiver discussions going on. But I would just like to stay in touch with Fred's program just to be sure they don't fall into a gap there where we lose the program entirely. And that happens at universities. So that's all. That's what I'm looking at or thinking about.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I, you know, in the preview, we were talking about LID, and Dave, you asked about, are we charging fees? Of course, nearly 100% of the effort is going to municipalities, not to private developers. And to me, that makes more sense in terms of the use of the funds that we have remaining, and also to make sure that we actually have some funds available, because we don't know everything what our needs are going to be in the future. And rather than just think, well, we got this money and here's a project we can use it on, I think we should be strategic and think in terms of saving that money maybe for another round with low-impact development in the future, maybe something else that we'll actually see has region-wide benefit in some other arena. But I don't think it's a good model to say that a for-profit industry should be subsidized by the few funds that we have remaining for water quality work when they do have the wherewithal. I know that, you know, farmers say slim margin and all that, but ultimately that's the model that we've got to have. I don't think there's any way we can say we'll continue to provide mitigation funds in order to ensure compliance.
Yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying, and I hadn't considered that when I made my first comment. But again, looking at our institutional resources, I have the same comment regarding the RCDs and watershed managers, and you know, we need to be aware of where those funding gaps are falling. This is the kind of coordination that we should be engaged in, that Fran brought to our attention, that some of the counties are going after, mm-hmm. Federal and state coordination of funds so that the right. So the, you know, they're looking at the system as a whole. And so that's always been, I think, my perspective on how we utilize our resources and the technical assistance capacity that we have and the role that we play. So I'm always looking for ways to maximize our impact on our communities.
What I recommend is that we actually follow up on your point, talk to Fred about where he is and actually what's happening with what you were talking about, Dave.
Find out whether something is really happening or right. whether it would be needed for one of us to go back to the farmers and ask them how come they haven't already taken care of it.
Right. But that would be my recommendation as far as the extent of our follow-up at this point. But you're the boss.
You know, I just want to throw my two cents in. I understand the difference between profit and nonprofit. And I don't think what really Russ is suggesting is that, well, in fact, he didn't say this would be a permanent situation. He's trying to encourage, greater buy-in by the farmers down the line so that they can get on board, see that this works, and just be more willing to participate. Maybe we don't have the money to actually do that in the way Russ is thinking in terms of funding another demonstration project, but perhaps we can facilitate getting other funds. Maybe there's more prop money that might fit this, category. Maybe there's something else we can do. Maybe we can do a matching grant situation or matching funds. But, I think if we get beyond some critical point with them, and they've seen this work in different parts of the watershed, that it might be helpful to us just to accelerate, this changeover. But just wanted you to know that I'm kind of keeping an open mind about this. I'm not putting, I'm not drawing the line so hard with profit and not profit and nonprofit, because I think that, many times, profit, they have just as much of an impact, if not more, on the water quality than nonprofit. And really what that's really what we're trying to target.
Right.
I'd like to just keep our options open and not close something down, too quickly. At least let's explore whether that's an option. If there are some sites available elsewhere, maybe we can help with some recommendations of getting other funding. Add a little bit of money to it, whatever it takes, just like we did with LID, get something rolling like this. This is the LID for ag, essentially. And it's going to have another paradigm shift in how farming, is accomplished and carried out. So I think it's really important, to try to consider all possibilities here.
Yeah. And you say it's the LID of ag, and I would say, like I was saying, the whole suite of practices that ag can use are LID for ag, not just this. This can be helpful in the right situations, this kind of a thing. But I guess, Jeff, my thinking is that we have been doing what you're saying time after time after time after time, not just us with our funding, but all the other sources of funding, proposition money, USDA, all the different sources of funding. And it seems like it's kind of the same argument. Well, if we just demonstrate this, then, everything will be fine. And I feel like we need to draw the line, and I would hate to utilize the relatively few number of dollars that we have left in terms of the long view picture things that we have in our region and really eat into that significantly. The $5,000 is not significant, but to start getting into a construction project, even if you're talking about matching funds, that would be very significant for the remaining funds that we have. And I just don't think that's appropriate given where we are and given all the demonstrations that we have had. But again, you're the boss, so.
Well, it would be great to know what it cost Fred to do what he did, you know, because I really have no perspective on, you know, what that cost is, what it would cost to replicate that. And if it is a big cost, well, that becomes a problem for us.
You know, I looked for that in their report. I thought it would be in there. I couldn't find it in there.
No,
I can ask them.
I'm not discounting what you're saying, Roger. I think it's valid. I do. I just want us to take, kind of keep the options open still, because we've got the opportunity with this particular problem of ag's treatment of its waste. Huge. And we have put a lot of money into this. I mean, more than we ever have for any one for-profit type of permittee or permittees. No question about it. It's huge.
But look at the return that we can get.
That's the other side of this, the return.
It's a huge area.
Yeah.
But not only, my thought is, not only our region, and Roger, you talked about, you know, statewide, but, you know, other regions have large agriculture areas, San Joaquin Valley, and so forth. Some of the projects and the things that we're doing could be beneficial to those regions as well as the rest of the state of California. But I don't look at it as, I'm not going to say money wasted, but I look at what could be the possible return, and the return is water quality, and that's what I'm here for, and that's what we're trying to accomplish. And if it takes that extra dollar to accomplish that, so be it. But on the other hand, if we can demonstrate and have whatever business it happens to be, whether it happens to be ag business or municipalities or some industry, then it's beneficial, and the dollars are worth being spent.
As long as we can afford it and we have it,
all that's legitimate. I understand that.
Yeah.
I understand that totally, and that's why I wasn't supporting to be a long-range type thing, but if it can get up and show that it's operable and it does the job that we're looking for, then I'm happy with the dollars that we spent. Okay. That's where I'm coming from, because what we retrieve from that is so great. I mean, you talk just the Salinas Valley, but I'm talking about our whole region, because you got Santa Maria and the farming down there. They have some of the same issues, San Joaquin Valley. All those areas that have large ag could use those type of demonstrations. And, again, each area is kind of unique in itself. That project there was mainly, I think, what I kind of took from that is the farmers in that area say, look, I have to have my tiling. I have to have some kind of discharge. I can't farm without it. Is this type of project going to be acceptable to the board as a mitigating type of project? Then a bunch of us farmers will get together, but I think the main question is, are we going to allow them to transport that, say, from outskirts of Salinas to Moss Landing? And, you know, and of course Steve showed some old maps, and Elkhorn Slough used to be a freshwater slough. It's now a saltwater slough. Salinas River didn't breach where it breaches now. It breached in Moss Landing in that particular area. So, you know, times change. Salinas River, yeah, it was a wide river at one time. It's narrowed because there's dams now that are for flood control. Yeah, you used to be able to fish for steelhead along the Salinas River, and you can't do that now. But there are steelhead coming back, Steve. So, I mean, there's some positive things. And I think with all of that, the things that we're doing, I mean, you know, LID projects, small ag projects, they're all worthwhile. Now, how much money we have involved in it? I know we don't have a big pot. We have some, but I like to keep some of those projects going.
Roger, can you find out what it cost Fred to
just... Yeah, I made a note to check with him.
So we have an idea of the capital costs involved in it.
Can I add one more real short comment on?
And then we're going to break for lunch.
Yeah. Right, I'm starving. I am starving myself. I think another idea to take away from the information we had today was I was really impressed with Darla's approach to connecting with the private sector and bringing them into her process in a way that will provide ultimate benefits to us. So she has been able to distinguish a way to identify those operators who have the capacity to do more than they would normally do, and that is to conduct training or to bring others in through mentoring. And so we can think about ways of formalizing those conditions in demonstration projects where we require that the implementer of the grant also has to achieve certain kinds of workshops or tours with the local landowners, et cetera, so that it's built into the process, and let's see what kind of results we get from that. You know, again, it's all an opportunity to explore how we get more out of every dollar we put out there.
Mr. Jeremy?
Yes.
I'm going to throw into the mix here that the reason that the LID initiative is getting responses from municipalities is because the municipalities are all now enrolled and they have requirements on them. And they are significant requirements. And this board spent a lot of time on those requirements and adding specificity. And when the municipalities do not do what is required, they are subject to enforcement action by this board. And we have issued several notices of violations to municipalities for not meeting the conditions, not meeting their requirements. And that is a major reason, the major reason why they are participating in the training and in the workshops and in the joint effort. We don't have that on the agricultural side of the coin. And that's what we're working on now. You need to have both in order to get projects like this actually implemented. Well, many of the support groups for agriculture are telling us that we can keep demonstrating these types of projects. We can keep getting grants and demonstrating them. But if there is no incentive for the industry to implement them, they will not implement them. There has to be a reason to do it, an incentive to do it. And that's where the board comes in. We have to have both. If we can continue to spend money and get grants, that won't be enough, and history shows that. We spent something on the order of $60 million in demonstration projects and support for agriculture over the past couple of decades. It hasn't worked.
Good point. Okay. Anything else, Mr. Briggs, as part of the EO report?
Yes.
Okay.
You want me to go ahead with that, or do you want to break and come back?
Well,
let's break. Okay. How much do we have?
How much do we have?
We can probably do it in 10 minutes.
Oh, then we should do it.
15.
What else is left over?
Just what else is part of the report that?
The budget, and were there any more reports from board members as far as things you have to report on?
No.
Okay. So we'll just say real quickly that